Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Here on WQAM, I'm actually looking at the television they're doing for the seventh inning stretch, I believe, God Bless America, and the crowd there looks not terrible.
You're reduced to that for Marlins game, terrible or not terrible on the Whittemeter?
It's not terrible. Like, it looked like the section behind home plate and the lower level, like it was legitimately like full. There was people in all of those seats. So last night the Marlins played a 16-inning game, and Manny was telling us, and Zach Duarte was on before us, was telling us that they were giving out vouchers to the people who stayed, and I think they need to give out more than that, like cash or, you know, concession bucks or something like that.
Or prepaid tuition for the
right,
kids.
Like,
yeah.
Right. Right, exactly. Like something much more than enduring 16 innings of baseball. I love to go and find, I'll look it up here as we talk, the total runtime of that game. Like when did that game end yesterday? And how barbaric is it that they subjected, you know, Marlins fans? By the way, I mean, like, it's funny that they're 17 games under 500, and yet I feel like every time I look at the schedule and they've won, like, oh, or like, I kind of, before every show, I'll scroll through a bunch of articles and be like, oh, Marlins won last night. Good for them. Like, I'm surprised every time I see them win, and I feel like they win much more than they do just based off of when I check it. But yeah, like, the game last night going 16 innings, like, well done to those fans for enduring all that.
Well, my thought was, shouldn't they just like have given him like room and board and let him sleep over if they were offering him tickets for today's game?
Right, exactly.
When it ended so late at that point, you know, just let him sort of roll out the cots, set up some air mattresses, and keep it going.
I can't seem to find runtime and attendance for the game. Oh, here we go. Attendance 6,259. Game time 5 hours and 31 minutes. The people that were there, for me, heroes. And we know that it's, I think, at least somewhere close to 6,259 because they actually report that number accurately now.
Right.
But yeah, 17% capacity, 5 hours and 31 minutes. That just can't happen, Ira.
Well, like, it's what I said in the previous segment, that minor league rules start the extra innings with a runner at second base.
Yeah.
And then you're going to generate runs. Then it becomes strategy like National League Baseball. Do you open the inning then with a bunt and take a crack at a sacrifice fly to get the run? Do you just hope organically one of the next three guys gets a hit? And at least you could play it that way. It'll be over a heck of a lot quicker.
I just think if each game is meant to matter and you want every fan of the team to watch every game, then you can't expect people to watch six games a week, I think, period, right?
Yes.
Like sometimes it's seven games a week, but sometimes it's six.
It's a ridiculous business model that you always hear, you know, baseball purists are the worst of all purists.
Sure.
I thought you, as soccer guy, was bad. But baseball purists are even worse. Oh, but then the home run total will change. And I've always said this about baseball. Change it to a manageable number, probably even less than 100 games. So I'm going massive. Take every record in the book, Bonds' home run record or whatever, and make it home runs per game.
Yeah.
Something like that.
Now, or
the
per
question
at bat
is,
or something.
People say, but is that games played or is that games per season? Because that's a little bit different. I don't care.
Home runs per plate appearance, maybe.
Or something like that. But
sure.
Rip up the record book. Don't let some stodgy old thing sitting in a corner dictate the future of your sport. And the one thing I think you would agree with.
It's basically like we can't be trusted to know who is good from a given era. Like you,
and the game
like
has changed,
like
you and athletes
have
changed.
You can know who is good. Like, you know that Mike Trout is really good at baseball
right now.
Like you don't need a record book to tell you that Mike Trout's really good.
And Babe Ruth was really good, and Lou Gehrig was really good,
right.
And Rod Carew was really good. And this whole fascination with numbers is ruining the sport. And again, I almost wonder where you see so many empty stadiums. We do. Yankee Stadium, the exception. Maybe Dodger
but even
Stadium.
Yankee Stadium has been empty.
No, see, here's the problem also. The problem is that is almost the red zone for the Panthers and everything. The prime seats in all these arenas and all these stadiums are so expensive. And also because the rich people are the most likely to say, I paid for the ticket, I'm not going.
Or my office gave me these and I had something else to do tonight.
So the vision.
Like there isn't as much commitment.
Yes, the vision behind home plate to the best seats is always empty. Just like I'm going to hate that situation at the Panthers games.
Yeah.
They're loyal fans, but not a lot of people are in Club Raid.
Well, it's like, I do like at least that the Dolphins, what they did with their version of it, which is basically put couches on one side of the field. At least that's not the side of the field that's on television.
And it's low and it's away and it's different. So you sort of create this whole thing, but you'd almost wonder.
But it's the same thing with the Heat and the flagship lounge. All those tickets that are on television are connected to lounges where people are in. Like those seats are not theoretically empty, meaning that there are no shows.
I don't
They're
understand
just not
that
in the seats.
I don't understand at all. And again, I think the Heat do so much right. I have to walk through the restaurant sometimes to get to interview areas, and they have an unbelievable buffet set up there. But when I hear people walk in for a 7:30 game and they lean over to their husband, they go, we have a table for 8 o'clock. And I'm like, well, wait a minute. That's also known as the second quarter. So you literally are leaving the game for a quarter of the game to eat this very lavish buffet.
Yeah.
But you can be in any restaurant anywhere at the same time instead of in your seats there. Mm-hmm. And so the whole thing is when people go to me, Heat fans are awful. I wish they could pan up to the upper deck, which is always packed anyway. My point on baseball being this, to open up your home stadium like Marlins Park 80 to 81 times a year, I think a better business model for them would be without the ushers and without the vendors and just all the electricity and things like that to open it up 40 times a year.
Yeah.
To get better crowds, more demand for your product.
Correct.
And to do it is probably a better business model. Someone has to get away from this. Like we were saying.
But the problem is that in St. Louis, they can do it 81 times a year and fill the stadium.
But so few places. But such a, if there are 30 or 32 major league teams.
30.
Okay, so if 10% of your business plan can do it, but it's unpalatable to the other 70%, you know, for 90% of it, then it's not a good business model. You and I were talking during
Okay, so there are four teams that fill 90%+ of their stadium. And nine teams that fill 80%+ of their stadium.
Okay, but I bet you that 80+ is sort of like the Marlins numbers of a year
ago. Nine is the Angels. I don't believe that.
Right. You've seen games there.
Yes, yeah. I've watched Angels games. They're like that place is not 80% full for every game.
So a ticket sold, tickets given away, charity tickets and all that. I just think that's a better model. You and I were talking about how you were frustrated that the NBA and NHL playoffs and finals were at the same time and you wish they were staggered, but neither of us was paying attention to baseball then. That if baseball said, hey, it's July 1, let's start the season, yay, or something like that, you'd have a shorter, more enjoyable, pay attention to a type of season.
Right. I don't even mind them playing the same amount of months, but like give these guys more rest days, give these guys more travel days, make each game feel important.
And maybe
that for me is the thing that only the NFL gets right, and the only reason the NFL gets it right is because the bodies of the players would break otherwise, right? If they could, the NFL would play once every Sunday, every week for the entire year. They simply would. The bodies can't.
To grab every dollar.
And so it's actually helped them, and then they go and hurt themselves by throwing Thursday Night
and
Football out there.
And here's the other part of it.
But that sense of anticipation is so important.
If you do that in baseball, and you go to three games a week, you know what else you have? You have your great pitchers pitching more often in a higher percentage of your game. So even if your team is not great, now the Marlins don't even have a number one, but if you're a Mets fan and you can get DeGrom and Syndergaard and not some of the other stuff, you know, we're a team that only has that, all the better. You're seeing the best of possible pitchers instead of some team's fifth guy because they have a doubleheader to make up another game.
Sure.
If you play three baseball games a week, if you play Friday, Sunday, and Wednesday, so you have the rainout days for other days anyway, you're going to see that ace-level pitcher in two of every three games, possibly.
Right. And so, like, the overall quality of the product improves with less of it. The NBA, I've said 58. I think you play every team once at home, every team once away, and like you will create with 3 days off or 2 days off, people going, oh, when's the next heat game?
Yes.
Whereas now when you play five games in a week, when you have, you know, 4 and 5 nights, like I think people miss games simply because, oh, I forgot that there was a game tonight.
Or
like
my,
that,
or my wife or my wife goes to me, there's another game tonight.
Right,
yeah,
exactly,
that sort of thing.
Right.
Yeah.
And like that happens all the time to me with the NBA where I just forgot that a game was on and a notification I get on my phone 15 minutes before tip off is reminding me that the game is happening. And so the reason why the NFL is our most popular sport and why most people like watch it is because they know
college football,
it's the same dynamic.
Once a week happening, and that's
correct.
What I always tell
and
people.
And it's on the same day every week, so every Thursday night, you know, there's gonna be an NFL game. Every Saturday from noon until 2 a.m. when the Hawaii game ends, there's going to be college football on. And every Sunday, starting at 1 o'clock until midnight, there's going to be football.
And you know what? If the Heat are on a long homestand, in a course of a week, you could make an argument that the Heat are going to attract as many fans in the seat as the Dolphins game. That if the Heat are going to get 15, 18, 20,000 over that four-game homestand,
sure.
When the Dolphins play one game, they get the same. When people talk about how, and you know this because you're in the industry, how NFL ratings just, you know, kill all other sports.
Sure.
Okay, but add up those Heat ratings from their Tuesday, Wednesday, Friday, Saturday game. That's what they're doing over a week. Combine that total viewership to the Sunday viewership,
right.
And it's a lot closer, but it's also just too much. It's just overkill and overhype. Shorten everything up. It's a better business model. Tradition
right.
sometimes
you're
is what kills sports.
But again, the idea is always you're telling people or you're telling businessmen, I'm getting rid of guaranteed dollars and I'm replacing them with maybe growth dollars,
and
right. Like, or like, you know, or and you're telling players the game will make more money,
and here's
but you're going to be paid
and
less
here's
for
part
now.
Two. The same players who are saying it's too much on their bodies, the same players who are saying that there are too many concussions, the same NFL players or even hockey now who are saying, okay, exactly. And the same players are saying down the road also the concussion thing in hockey that's going on now. So really what you're telling the players is this. We can protect your health to a greater degree. And I agree with both of you guys that the players are going to go, yeah, I'll take the cash instead.
right, exactly. Like cash, you know, I don't want to use a cliche, but bird in the hand is worth two in the bush. Like that's basically what this is that we're saying that these sports would be better, right? Like if I told you the NBA was, you know, 58, the NBA and the NHL can for me go to 58 games. And MLB, like I've thought to kind of figure out what the right number is. Like the best that I've come up with is basically 116, which is you play every team four times, twice at home and twice away. Like that, like
but the weekend series, that kind of screws you up there.
Sure,
I mean the optimal baseball schedule is only on weekends.
Okay, but if we're saying,
but if we're saying we're
giving you, you know, two games a week, you play once Friday and once Sunday.
Right. Well, that's why the Big Three has the best model. You just play on Friday nights and you're done. And that's why I am riveted to Fox. To the point, literally, with my wife.
Are you going, by the way, to the
I am
when it's
go
coming?
The 20th to American Airlines Arena. Last week they were playing. I just wanted to see what was going on, and I went to FS1. It wasn't on. And I went to FS2, and it wasn't
on.
It
was on Network Fox, wasn't it?
And it was on Network Fox. All the places I did not expect to see Big Three basketball.
Yeah.
And my wife went, one, what is this? Two, is this real? Three, I will be in the bedroom watching something else. Enjoy all you want. Yes, I was the guy watching.
But like that's how desperate you are to watch sports that you watch Big Three
and,
basketball.
Right. Unlike Hockman, I did not have the money line on Trilogy. Yeah.
I feel like that's like something that could most use gambling is like, you know, something that is so nondescript and otherwise like or has no associations, right? Like the people involved, Ice Cube is involved,
right?
The players you recognize, but like the actual team names and all that stuff, you don't actually know
anything. You don't
know
who's who, and you don't realize, oh my God, that's Quintel Woods. He's still playing, and it's still the only place you can still see Kwame Brown.
I was gonna say, what was the name that most jumped out of you while watching the Big Three?
Quintel Woods, just because he was such a marginal NBA player because there were all those, you know, background issues. He played very briefly, actually, for the Heat also. But then there was one guy I saw, and I was like, wow, Dion Glover. Remember him? Played at Georgia Tech briefly for the Hawks.
No.
And he had like this gray beard.
Yeah.
There's a lot of gray in that league. Mahmoud Abdul-Rauf is playing still.
Right.
You know.
If I was in charge of the Big Three, I would have a rule that if there's gray in your beard, you have to shave. because like it's you're basically reminding everyone you're watching old men playing basketball. Like, old men who are not good enough for the NBA play basketball. Why are you reminding me with your gray facial hair?
And then you have Rashard Lewis, who still looks really, really good.
Really?
But he's just into it. This is the level he wants to play. He wants to play basketball. He wants to have fun. The back of his jersey says Sweet Lou. He's just out there for the enjoyment of it, and it really is neat. You know what? You've also had some fights. You've also had some moments.
Have you really? Yeah. I like this.
There have actually been moments on the court there also where guys have gone at it. Gary Payton is an animated coach, as you might expect. So there are half the guys taking it seriously, a third of the guys, you know, or a quarter of the guys going for a paycheck, and a quarter of those guys like who were just, wow, I could still play. I'm going to literally roll myself out there in some form. Al Harrington, maybe you stay away from the donut eating competition next time.
By the way, so I listened to this podcast from England that talks about soccer, and they played this game called Culverhouse, which was the last name of just like basically a journeyman player from like the late 80s, early 90s. Okay. And the game is basically just name players from, you know, name random athletes. And then at the end, the first person who says Culverhouse wins. And so they like go through like a minute and 30 seconds of just naming all these random Premier League players from when they were kids. I feel like this, like, the big three is, like, the real-life version of that game, which is name random NBA players that you don't remember. Like, all of a sudden, I'm going to be, like, you're going to be watching, and Yakuba Diawara is going to be out there.
Sebastian Telfair, maybe?
Right, yeah, like, just like these.
Or Popeye Jones?
Right. Like, Stacey Augmon's going to be running around out there or something like that. Like, right. just like random
it's
players.
It's like the celebrity version of Dead or Alive. Yeah, exactly. Big three, right?
It's the basketball version of Dead or Alive. It's incredible.
And it basically is a whole bunch of guys who've already gone over, done the China thing, averaged 60 points a game over there, and then they come back.
All right, Steve Ashburner of NBA.com is going to join us next. Chris Whittingham and Ira Winderman here on the 4th of July on WQAM. And, of course, Manny Chang has gone for the hacky music. I mean, the playlist on the 4th of July is the most obvious thing you can do. The most obvious musical selections in the world. But right now, Ira, we're going to talk some NBA.
Steve Ashburner from NBA.com joins us, taking his time off on the holiday. We appreciate it. Steve, how you doing?
I'm good. Happy Independence Day, guys.
Well, we're working. Hopefully you're not or taking some time away, but I do want to let people know you were just part of an NBA blog table that's up right now at NBA.com, which I thought was a really fascinating topic because of all this talk about 1 through 16 playoff seeding and all-star game, vote for any different conference. You were sort of a part of a panel and a back-and-forth discussion of, with LeBron James gone from the East, who's the best player in the East? And Steve, who did you go for, and why did you go for him?
My pick was Giannis Antetokounmpo, and I assume you asked me not to just have me pronounce that name. I think Giannis is, as I put in my comment, all he needs is a reliable perimeter shot, and he can swing some of the balance back by, you know, arguably contending as best player in the NBA entirely, not just the Eastern Conference. I just think I've had the opportunity, based in Chicago, to get up to Milwaukee quite often and see his development. And both emotionally, you know, in terms of the way he's approached his task, his job, wanting to get better, his commitment to the Bucks and the game, and the skills. I mean, the ridiculous frame that he has to play the game with, the outstanding length and reach and wingspan and all that kind of stuff. And he has a tremendous set of skills that, allow him to legitimately be a point forward and yet can play, you know, center when needed if they want to go small and compete against death lineup type things.
Steve, when we look at the league right now, everyone's saying with LeBron gone, the East is such a second half, such a lesser conference. In that piece you wrote, you also wrote about the possibilities of the Celtics and them emerging as the elite right there. Is the Eastern Conference as down, because people around here want to know because the Heat might be up then, as people think, or is there more to it than maybe people are giving credit just because the single best player in the conference moved west?
Yeah, I mean, if you believe some of the hand-wringing and whales, I mean, you would think that the E-Conference is worse than the G League, right?
Or the Big Three, like we were talking about, okay.
Yeah, there you go. I I'm right in the hip thick of the the Great Lakes area and all these teams that are in this region. I mean, maybe we'll have to call it the Pretty Good Lakes region moving forward. But no, I think there's plenty to like. I think Toronto and Boston and Philadelphia, you know, are potentially finals regulars. I mean, they're going to duke it out almost like the old Celtics and Sixers did. What you're looking for is that third team back in the 80s. You had Nelly's Bucks, and I was around them quite a lot. And who's going to be that third team? Is Toronto's window, open enough to allow that? Can Milwaukee make some strides with Budenholzer? Washington, it seems like their time might be past a little bit, but Indiana overachieved last year. You don't have maybe the automatic all NBA players that grab casual fans' attention.
Right.
But you've got a good amount of quality. Certainly, to go seven teams deep. I mean, there are a lot of mediocre teams that seem to have other agendas right now, or perennially have other agendas. But for the top half of that conference, I think there's enough to like there. It's just not the type that is going to give the networks a lot of early, first game of doubleheader, sort of big ratings moments. They're going to miss LeBron that way. In terms of, Toronto might like it. They might get some national television coverage. But,
or Houston's going to get a lot of 7 o'clock local starts or 6 o'clock local starts. Yeah.
Yeah.
And we're joined here by Steve Ashburner here on WQAM. And I think Toronto is an interesting proposition because I think a lot of people thought that they should blow the thing up because LeBron just had them sort of mentally in his cage. And now I feel like you look at their prospects. I wouldn't say that if they went up against Boston or Philly in these last playoffs that they would have been that, unlikely to win those series. Do you feel like now with a coaching change and basically staying the same, they haven't really made too many moves, that they can go and win the Eastern Conference?
I think if they had known LeBron was going to leave the East like this, they could have held on to Dwayne Casey. I don't see any particular reason to have made that change when you promote, Nick Nurse from within. I don't expect dramatic changes. Or if so, Nick Nurse wasn't sort of revealing all his cards as a key member of Casey's staff if he's holding on to ideas. I know that assistants can only suggest, but you would hope that you'd have all the suggestions out there. So, no, I don't expect a dramatic change in the Raptors, but I agree with you. I think their mental block was LeBron. I don't think there's anything particularly wrong with that team, and they made, big strides. I think that they put too much into the regular season, even striving to win game numbers, 60 of victory type of thing, and their bench was a little bit overrated with the short rotations that teams use in the postseason. But they're a quality team, and Miami's always competitive. There's nothing I can tell you guys about that situation down there. They're the antithesis of tanking, no matter what. And so, I think there's a lot to choose from.
Steve, do you envision a scenario where Kawhi Leonard is still on the Spurs at the start of this next season?
I suppose I could see that. I don't see panic coming, out in San Antonio. I think that while this may be totally new to them to have this little, this sort of rupture in their culture, I don't know that they're going to do anything silly and it doesn't put the Spurs' interests first. I can't imagine that they want to deliver him to the Lakers, do anything to help any of their particular rivals. And so, maybe if they get wooed by, a team from the East, they would get something done sooner rather than later. But Leonard and his health and his availability to play, that's a big part of this too. I don't think they want to get through training camp and not have the player or a deal. No, I wouldn't be all that surprised. He's not going to lose any value, I don't think. I mean, and anything that goes up to the trade deadline, which is earlier these days in the season than in the past, who's to say that they couldn't work something out even that late?
Steve, we know that the awkward market now for big men in the NBA. On one hand, people try to tell us that the dinosaur of center is gone. And in a way, you see when Dwight Howard is traded for nothing, bought out for nothing, and then signed for nothing. On the other hand, you see DeAndre Jordan, who Mark Cuban's been waiting all these years, goes out and gets his $24 million anyway. Team, you mentioned you cover a lot, the Milwaukee Bucks. You get up there from Chicago and see them. Obviously could use a little more beef, a little more physicality, a little more of a big man, which brings me round circle to the question of Hassan Whiteside, trade value, today's NBA. If the Heat wanted to, as we think, with the way he's at loggerheads with Eric Spoelstra, seemingly, is there a market for Hassan Whiteside in today's NBA market? And when you look at the Bucks up there, is that something you think they might consider?
Boy, in terms of Whiteside, you know him better than I do. Mm-hmm. I mean, sitting up here in Chicago and what I gather from his circumstance and some of the friction or chafing that went on, with the Heat, is that, are you taking a guy that's a mini Boogie Cousins in terms of attitude? And is he at all a problem in the locker room that way? And, I know that there have been some ups and downs with him in Miami. And you can say, well, it's a guy who just wants to play. He thinks he can help the team more and he should be out there. And given his contract, he sure as heck should be involved on the floor more. But I don't know. I mean, Budenholzer seems very much into the whole he's looking for shooters now, and mm-hmm. and Giannis can draw the defensive attention in a way. I don't know if Hassan Whiteside is a guy who's you need to do that, and does he get in the way if he's down in the low post when Giannis is so able to get to the rim himself? I don't know. I guess the asking price is always the other side of any equation like that.
We're joined here by Steve Ashburner on WQM on Twitter at Ash. ASCHNBA. And you mentioned Boogie Cousins in the middle of that, and he is certainly a fascinating discussion point because of his move to the Golden State Warriors. I think of it from a basketball standpoint. Now, obviously, the health is a big part of it, but if Boogie Cousins looks anything like 100% of himself, it's kind of scary to envision a Golden State Warriors team that makes a real upgrade, right? We think of them as already the peak of the NBA, the peak of basketball, and yet the difference between Boogie Cousins and Pachulia and McGee and Bell and all these random bigs that they've thrown out there the last few years. I mean, I guess Bogut was probably the best player,
and even
Bogut was kind of towards the end of his career. But Boogie Cousins represents such a different proposition than all of those guys. Do you actually think that there is a sense of diminishing returns with a basketball team that if they're actually playing five All-Stars at the same time, is it almost impossible for there to be yet more growth of this team?
Well, I mean, that's how I sort of learned the game, following the NBA, back in the 70s when the Philadelphia 76ers, and I tweeted about this mm-hmm. after Cousins went there, when they had George McGinnis and Dr. J and World Be Free and Daryl Dawkins and Doug Collins and Henry Bibby, and people were saying, guys, there's only one basketball. And that's, that's sort of been NBA gospel for so long that adding offensive players, you don't just sum up their scoring averages and say, well, that's what we're going to average next year. I mean, something has to give. Now, to me, the whole thing with Cousins and the Warriors, because he's likely to be a half-season proposition in terms of when he's fully recovered from his Achilles injury and rehab,
right.
And even then, the way Steve Kerr, can mix and match lineups to have him on the floor, with some of those guys and without some of those guys, and, 8 minutes where he's a featured player and then another 8 minutes where, he's asked to be more of a team guy and work the boards. I mean, I think they can make it work. Whatever questions there are physically about DeMarcus Cousins because of this comeback from a really, a devastating injury, I think the questions about his temperament loom every bit as large. And you could say, well, he's going to be on his best behavior because this is a one-year deal and
right.
he wants to spruce up his market value. But, that's easier said than done in the moment when he expects to be served. And because he may say, well, being a good soldier and winning a ring is what's going to improve my marketability. But, age-old wisdom says, I got to get my scoring average up, to improve my marketability. So, how he handles this, if he's available for what we think he will be, second half of the season for some sort of limited minutes, just by their manpower more than any physical limitations, then it's really just on, you know, how he carries himself and sees this through. I've seen teams try to do a little bit too much sometimes, mm-hmm. where they do add the extra scores and it doesn't make people happy, inside or outside.
Chris Whittingham and Ira Winderman filling in today for Huckman and Crowder on this July 4th, joined by venerable NBA reporter Steve Ashburner from NBA.com. Steve, I know you do a bunch of these blog tables. You go back and forth. You debate possibilities. You did a bunch of free agency previews. The way it played out with LeBron, for him to go to what I perceive as a non-contending team right now. So we have the blast of news on Sunday. LeBron James is going to the Lakers. Followed by Lance Stephenson, JaVale McGee, Kentavious Caldwell-Pope, Rajon Rondo. I have no idea what's going on there. How the way LeBron played out, could you even fathom that this is the end game for LeBron? Or did you have a sense that it might play out this way, even without a plus one joining him with the Lakers?
No, I didn't see this happening at all. I mean, I was wrong on my timing. I was sort of right on the team that I, you know, and I was around. I was on the Cavaliers the entire playoff run, so I saw a lot of them and was around LeBron as he went through his, you know, ups and downs and sideways moods during the postseason. And late in a very short finals, he was talking a bit about playing with a high IQ guys and playing with guys who really are competitors and that will handle pressure of playing for championships. And, you know, the high IQ stuff doesn't apply to Lance Stephenson, JaVale McGee. But I think that maybe with Lance Stephenson, he's earned, or he's come to a level of respect for Lance just by Stephenson's willingness to go toe-to-toe with him in any situation, even to the point of humiliating himself at times. So maybe he just sees, you know, Stephenson's talent and figures, well, you know, he's a guy that he can help shape and mold. But no, I never saw that. I thought for sure that it was going to be Paul George in tandem going to the Lakers, or it was going to be, you know, a Kawhi Leonard deal that gets swung and triggered within 24 hours one way or the other of LeBron making up his mind. I actually thought LeBron was going to, you know, wait longer and make an announcement sort of in the, you know, the middle of the main week of Las Vegas next Wednesday or something like. Kind of around the time he did last time.
Sure, that's where I convinced my boss to go to Vegas, and now I'm going to be out there reporting on nothing, but that's another story, so don't tell anyone because I figured no one's probably listening today anyway. And then we have part two of the surprise. I guess Paul George, we sort of started to hear it a little bit that he might be going back, that it's good enough for him. He did that segment on ESPN with Dwayne Wade, where even though he mentioned the Lakers, he wasn't overly effusive. But take me inside your thought process of what you think Paul George's thought process is, because I don't see the Oklahoma City Thunder as maybe better than a top four team in the Western Conference. Same problem, still stuck with that Carmelo Anthony contract, that even if they stretch it, there are going to be ramifications there during Paul George's contract that he signed longer than we thought. Steve, does it make sense to you on any level what Paul George has done?
I was totally surprised. We have one of our blog table things up today on what was the biggest surprise to free agency. And I'm the one that said Paul George signing and signing so quickly with the Oklahoma City Thunder. It was I never saw that happening. I thought that the more he said nice things about Oklahoma City, the more convinced I was that he was leaving, because Paul George is a pleaser. And, that, right. and I don't mean that like he was a big tease or anything, but you ask him a question a certain way, and he gives you the answer that you're hoping to put in the middle of paragraph.
And it also sounds like he was trying to soften the departure.
Yeah, it just seemed like he was a foot out the door.
Yep, I agree with that. And all I can think of is that, you know, the relationship with Russell Westbrook, you know, was authentic and compelling. I also wonder, I mean, I covered Kevin Garnett his entire Minnesota run, and he was a guy who hated change. And really had to be talked into going to Boston, which ended up being the best thing for him. But Paul George, having gone through a change once with the departure from Indianapolis to Oklahoma City, you know, maybe that didn't have the appeal that he thought it would have when he was a year away from any sort of a big move like that. And I'll be honest with you, it makes me wonder whether he really wants the pressure to sort of step up and be the man. He's safely Russell Westbrook's wingman, and you could say, well, he would be LeBron's wingman. Yes, he would, but he'd have to commit to going there first or, you know, on his own. And It makes me wonder if this is a safer
pressure,
situation for his personality.
Yeah, I think so. Steve, we're running a little short on time. I'm going to put you under the pressure that a newspaper print sort of guy doesn't want to be in with quick answers. I'm going to give you team names. I want you to tell me what position in their conference you think they're going to finish. So I know this is way too random, but this is what we do to people on the 4th of July. The Los Angeles Lakers, where do they finish? What seed in the West? Give me a number.
Six.
Oklahoma City Thunder.
I say three.
Okay. Eastern Conference, Philadelphia 76ers.
Second.
Cleveland Cavaliers.
Poor Cleveland. How about 11th?
Wow.
And this is the number I had in my head.
And I'll end it with the hometown team here as people are enjoying their holiday. The Miami Heat will finish where in the NBA's Eastern Conference during the regular season?
Miami will finish right where they finished this past year. They'll be sixth again.
Playing it safe. We appreciate it. Steve, thank you so much on a holiday to take your time like this. Everyone, go to NBA.com. If it says Steve Ashburner on it, click it a lot and click all the ads. Steve, we really do appreciate it. Enjoy the rest of your holiday. Thanks so much.
And remember, the right answer for the day is hamburgers. You only go to a hot dog if you're still hungry after a couple hamburgers.
And we ended with the perfect piece of knowledge. As long as you're not putting ketchup on your hot dog, we're fine. Thanks so much, Steve.
Bye, guys.
Bye, Steve.
All right, that is Steve Ashburner of NBA.com. Chris Whittingham, Ira Winderman in for Hawk and Crowder here on WQAM. Rap patrol on the patrol. Foes that want to make sure my clothes. Rap critics say he's money cash. I'm from the hood, stupid. What type of facts are those? If you grew up with hoes in your zap of toes, you celebrate. Chris Whittingham, Ira Winderman in for Hawkman and Crowder here on a 4th of July holiday. Thanks for joining us. I imagine whenever I do holidays like 4th of July or Thanksgiving that are kind of like family gathering holidays, I always imagine my audience is someone in line at a gated community it's like a 20-car line to get in. It's going to take you 15 minutes, so I'll pop on the radio while I'm waiting to get in, and we go to our family gathering. So I feel like that's who I'm talking
or
to today.
Or circling around the parking lot somewhere because they're going to a public park or they're going to the beach or something like that, and Hollywood Beach trying to find one of those open meters, yeah.
Right, exactly, or waiting for someone to leave.
Yes.
I feel like that's a tactic that I learned when I was at the University of Miami. At the University of Miami, particularly Tuesday, Thursdays, around like 11 o'clock, if you have like an 11 o'clock class and you're trying to find a parking spot, it's damn near impossible because everyone has class at the same time. And so you basically have to drive near the front of the building, find someone who's leaving, go, are you leaving?
And chase them out at the mall looking for a spot.
Right, exactly.
And the problem is at a place like Hollywood Beach now, it used to be, I mean, the holy grail was finding a meter with time on it. Like, woo, I get free parking. The second best thing was at places, someone would hand you the little ticket they have saying, hey, I still have another hour on this. Do you want it? The one you put in your windshield.
Sure.
Now they use the app. So
the
you
app,
can't do that
app
anymore.
Or your driver's license. Right. Like everything is based off your license plate.
So you no longer can get anyone's leftover time, either from a receipt or actually from their thing. You have to pay for the full 1, 2, 3 hours that you want. There's no more cheating the system anymore, and I think that's wrong. I mean, the one thing was there was a parking lot in Marco Island we used to go to, and it was by the end of the beach, and you buy a one-day parking ticket, and you know you pay your $6 or whatever. But when people left, you just go, can I have your ticket? It was not license plate specific. So you could just get away doing that anyway. So that was the difference. Now you can't cheat the system. These people have gamed us at our own game.
And I like the app. I like the app because it'll like send you a notification that you know your time is going to end in 15 minutes. But my thing is, what is the grace period that the people who check these things allow for? So like because it'll send you like, all right, in 15 minutes it's going to end. And if I remember like in 23 minutes to go and like if I forgot to refresh in
I think you
get dinged for?
Yeah, I think if they're coming right around. The good thing about the apps is they do give you that reminder.
Right,
so
exactly.
Then you have to say,
I
need to be within 15 minutes or really to be looking at my phone if that's the case to get back there. Or you could actually just put the time on right on your phone. So I think that's fine. I mean, to me, you don't get any more of the old days of the ticket meter person coming around and you running down the block. Wait a minute, that's my car. Or putting the boot on it. I mean, and as you know, you talked about most of your life staying away from South Beach, and that's a good reason too, because the parking there is like no place, you know, in this state, maybe in America, when it comes to a spot there. You talk about circling around sometimes, and the draconian policies, like literally, like if you're putting a key in the car, they're putting a ticket on the windshield when you're doing it at the same time.
Right, and like the thing that I've, you know, thought about doing before is like parking out in front of a storefront of a place that's closed, and that's like the ultimate. You're leaving yourself open to having your car booted or you know, basically unable to move it. Yes, Manny.
Hey guys, so quick story. I work at Mercedes-Benz of Coral Gables. It has gotten so packed in Coral Gables, we don't even have our own parking. We have to park right where the meter is, and we have a guy assigned to tell us, meter man, meter man, meter man.
That's really? How we move our cars. The employees there are reduced to that?
Huh?
That's crazy. That's the employees. I'm sure the customers still could park, right?
No, the customers have their own parking.
Right.
Employees do not.
Wow. That's crazy.
Even the mechanics have their own mic thing that says, meter man, meter man, meter man. So they have to run to Sevilla to move their car.
That's crazy.
That is. Yeah. And are the meters the kind that you actually need to put coins in, or you can?
No, you can actually have it on your phone.
So they stay where they are and they just reload.
Yes.
There's not a parking limit of you can't go over 4 hours or something like that.
You can't go over 8.
All right, well, that's a shift,
You can't, and I presume, like, the company pays for your parking?
They do not.
Well, that's great. But
welcome to Coral Gables.
Yeah, I feel like...
So that's why you're working July 4th, middle of the day.
Are you near a public transit station? Like, if you wanted to take Metro Rail there, could you?
I haven't seen any trains. Maybe buses, but not trains.
Because I know in the Gables the Metro Rail stops right in front of the campus. So I feel like maybe there's a stop somewhere. But yeah, like maybe you're taking I know people that lived on South Beach or live on South Beach. They just don't own a car and they Uber and Lyft everywhere.
Right.
Uber, Lyft, and walk everywhere.
Now with the train to the airport, you can get away with that. So that makes sense to me also. Yeah.
Right. So you can basically ride share everywhere you have to go. But yeah, I mean those kind of situations, and on 4th of July. Especially, like, I'm lucky because I live at a building where it's connected to a beach, and so you basically have to basically proof of identification. But
right.
But almost like having that parking spot on this day is almost the most important
liquid
thing.
Liquid gold, sure.
Right.
Yeah.
I guarantee you probably that I'm going to drive home. There's going to be somebody in my parking spot.
Has that happened to you often?
Oh yeah, it happens to me like twice, like 10 times a year.
Do you feel any remorse, or do you immediately call for a tow?
I feel some. I try and have, because like my building has a security team,
right?
So I have them try and figure out who it is. Because the other thing too is that sometimes, like before I bought my parking spot, it was on a list of parking spots that like is not owned by anyone,
mm-hmm.
And so sometimes valet would park cars there. And
right.
so it would be
really?
On the valet.
They would take your...
Yeah, like they would take mm-hmm. my parking spot with like the valet would park there
because
there was nowhere else to park it. But yeah, I've never had a car towed from my spot.
So you live somewhere where there's a walkway to the beach. You live somewhere where there's a security team. You live somewhere where there's valet parking. What the heck are you doing radio in the middle of the day on July 4th?
I gotta pay for it.
You get back to your mansion there, your casa. And I assume this is some sort of penthouse.
Listen, I live in a studio apartment. Let's not get crazy.
And I pay $18 a day when I miss the meter man.
Oh, man.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's not good.
It's crazy.
Not
yeah,
good
no,
times.
My son almost didn't graduate just because of unpaid parking tickets.
Really?
Any college campus in America, they're all the same, and UF is the same way.
So how about this? I am a currently student at FIU. I work at FIU, and I have to still pay for a parking pass for the summer.
Yeah.
Cost $250 for 3 months.
Oh, parking at the University of Miami was extortion.
But I'm like, dude, work at the football facilities right behind the stadium. You mean I have to pay for parking for 3 months? Yes.
How much is Butch Davis paying?
He ain't paying for nothing. Ken Dorsey ain't paying for nothing. Nah.
But at the University of Miami, when I started there, it used to be you can park anywhere on campus. Like if you bought, because there was like a discount parking pass where you can park like, you know, way far flung areas and walk wherever. There are people that just did that. But I bought a parking pass where you can basically park anywhere on campus. And then they moved to basically, based off of what you were majoring in, they gave you a parking pass that was closest to your school.
Okay.
But it was the same price. So you couldn't then...
So you were limited
so,
to like
so
one
So you were limited
one
to
tenth.
One section of campus, but if you had to walk all the way across campus, you couldn't park there. You had to walk across and then walk back. The longest walk at UM is like a half hour from one end of the campus to the other. And so there were times you have to walk an hour to go from I was at the communications school, which was on the east side of campus,
mm-hmm.
and like the athletics building was all the way on the west side of campus, and I'd occasionally have to make the walk to and from or risk getting a parking ticket, which could be like $100.
That's crazy.
Yeah, it's insane. I don't know how we got into parking on the 4th of July. Like maybe we should talk about some sports. So I do want to ask you.
Sure.
If you're the Lakers, do you, and we basically, yesterday on the show, we played fake GM, right, where I called you, I was RC Buford, and you were Pat Riley, and I said, what would you be willing to give up?
Right.
So the reported offer for the Lakers and Kawhi is Ingram, Hart, Josh Hart, Kyle Kuzma, two picks, and two pick swaps. So it's basically the Brooklyn trade with one more pick swap.
Trade with a team that historically has never been as bad as Brooklyn became.
Right, and also the Lakers have LeBron for 4 years. They're never going to. That's never in a million years unless someone chops his leg off.
Even the number nine pick,
right?
Like
unless someone chops
his
leg off,
right.
Is ever going to be number three, number one, and number eight, which is what the Brooklyn trade ended up being.
It would have to be an injury. Could be an injury. Could be he missed a time, but he's been, you know.
Yeah, I mean, it would have to be more than an injury. It would have to be like a decapitation for me, given LeBron's injury history. But if you're the Lakers, and I saw a story that they're just considering writing it out, and we'll sign him as a free agent next year.
How did that work with Paul George last year when they were going to write it out?
Okay, but they got LeBron.
But they thought they had Paul George.
Sure, absolutely. But that, like, do you think that if LeBron was going to the Lakers, like if LeBron had decided to stay in Cleveland, because basically from everything I heard, because I was listening to Brian Windhorst today on with Zach Lowe.
Right.
He said he basically knew that LeBron was going to L.A. like a month ago.
And people knew before that.
Right.
Chris Sheridan, you know, you could say he was guessing, but at the start of the season, he had it. Peter Vesey had it last summer. There were so many arrows and so many reasons because a lot of people started to realize it wasn't a basketball decision.
Sure.
So what you've been trying to do the last 2 days with me is I'm going to use basketball logic to try to figure this out. You had to throw basketball logic out the window because this is the rare, unique person who it's about more than championships, even though it's about championships.
Right. And so there is kind of a thought that because you have LeBron under contract, because you basically signed all these one-year deals where you know you're not winning, why would you give up assets that you can turn into a third star to go and basically strip yourself of any possible trade going forward, right? Because if you give up everything for Kawhi, then when LeBron starts agitating for another playmaker or another shooter or whatever, you've got nothing left. You've got nothing left of value to go and trade someone if you then give it all up for Kawhi Leonard. If you can get him in a year, do you basically tell him, hey, just write it out for the year, and then we'll sign you?
Okay, but here's the thing about whether Kawhi rides it out for a year and Kawhi gets healthy, and this is the debate I had, and we talked about it yesterday with LeBron not going to the Knicks because Porzingis is out at least for half the year and maybe the full year. Chris, since when did giving up a year of his career at age 33 make sense for LeBron? So you're telling me LeBron at age 33, after playing 82 games this year and battling like heck to get to the finals, is going to take a leap year, is going to take a year off, is going to be not playing baseball in Birmingham, but essentially stepping back like Michael Jordan did, you know, for whatever reason, and doing it that way? That it just seemed like he was the last guy who was willing to give up a year of his basketball life to do that. What I think would be possible is this. As you know, players you sign in the offseason, you can trade as early as December 15th. The trove that the Lakers might have available, perhaps to tempt the Spurs or work in a three-way trade, might be available then also. So maybe this is just being deferred till December 15th. That date's going to resonate a little more, I think, with the Lakers.
You think that the Spurs would do like Kentavious Caldwell-Pope, Lance?
Not whether they would, or Rondo or McGee. I'm not saying they would. But a third party might, that you have at least more intriguing chips just now, because when everything came down, it was always Kuzma, it was always Brandon Ingram, and whether you want to put Josh Hart, to me, he's a non-factor in there, and Lonzo Ball, we basically heard without hearing that he's not a palatable option to the Spurs for whatever reason.
It's because of LeVar Ball.
Okay, but don't you think there are still enough downtrodden NBA teams where even if it came with LeVar, it would be good for them? Like an Atlanta a non-place kind of team?
I think we live in one. I think Miami. I would call the Lakers and ask for LeVar.
Okay.
You're asking for LeVar. You're asking for Lonzo.
For Lonzo, right.
But you're getting LeVar. Like, if I'm Miami, like, Lonzo to me represents someone with a massive amount of upside that can become a star that I don't think the Heat have right now on the roster. At the very least, a playmaker that I don't think they have on the roster.
So I think there are other trade options to work around if you wait a little while. And you know what? Here's the other side of it, Chris.
Sure.
What if it works out great? What if Rondo, he can't shoot, they don't have shooters. They're more weight than one way to win a game. And the one thing I heard from every coach as this Warriors monolith started was this. If you think you're going to beat them at their own game, you're wrong. Now, the Rockets came close to beating them at their own game.
Well, they took their game to an extreme. In some respects, they did turn into a different game. Well, I'd say it's actually a lot different of a game because they were playing isolation.
Right.
And they
Isolation to threes versus running into threes.
But, like, Golden State takes threes, but they're an outcome of the offense rather as the Houston Rockets.
And they also take long twos, offense. Right. And the Warriors do also.
Right. But threes for the Rockets aren't emphasis
of their
offense.
But the general thought being if you're going to try to out three-pointer the Warriors, you're not.
Sure.
So maybe what the Lakers are doing is trying to come in from a different angle, and they can take a few months to see if it works, and maybe it will work.
But I still think, though, with the Kawhi situation, that I'm willing to take that risk because I want to preserve my tradable assets for a third piece.
Agreed.
I want to preserve everything. I'm not going to cash it all in for someone I can get in 12 months. And if I lose him in 12 months, there's going to be other free agents. I'm still going to have max calorie space, and I still think that
max
I can attract
space. And you could always wind up
with Jimmy Butler
or Clay
instead.
Thompson or
right,
something
exactly.
else.
Yeah, like you go and get someone else with that max salary space that you didn't use on Kawhi.
The whole shock of all that and what you just said is this, that LeBron James might be willing to sacrifice one of his few remaining years. Before we go to break, you know what? After we come back from break, I'm going to ask you this question. How many more championship-level years do you believe LeBron James has in him?
That's coming up next here on WQI.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.